Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, October 27th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Berkshire Plastic Surgeons in Great Barrington and Pittsfield, offering skin cancer screenings, Botox injections, fillers, cosmetic, and reconstructive surgery. BerkshirePlasticSurgeons.com. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and joining us today for Medical Monday is Dr. Lynn Choi of Albany Med. Dr. Choi offers patients a comprehensive range of medical and surgical options to treat breast cancer and other breast diseases. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. That's the telephone number. And then the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Breast Health with Dr. Lynn Choi, and your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here on this Medical Monday is Dr. Lynn Choi of Albany Med. Dr. Choi specializes in breast surgery. She has advanced breast fellowship training that offers patients a comprehensive range of medical and surgical options to treat breast cancer and other breast diseases. She also sees patients who have an increased lifetime risk of breast cancer. Now, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but any time is the right time for this conversation. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551, or you may email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. 800-348-2551. Dr. Lynn Choi, great to see you again. How are you?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
Very nice to have you back. It's your yearly appearance, and it's great to have you.
It's like old friends catching up.
It's fun. And boy, what a great conversation we just had. I'll tell you, we can't say most of it on the radio, okay, but it was fun. Albany Med has this new deal, and I don't know much about it. It's localization seeds, and apparently this is sort of next generation, minimally invasive. Tell us about it.
So when a woman has something seen on breast imaging that needs to be biopsied, they leave a tiny little titanium clip. Everyone asks if you can go through the airport security. You can. The reason why this tiny little titanium clip is placed is when the pathology comes back, if it's a cancer or if it's a high-risk lesion, the clip is kind of like X marks the spot. This is where the surgeon has to go to remove this area. So before, for surgery, they would come in the morning of surgery. They would get a wire placed, a long wire. The tip of the wire would point to the titanium clip. And then when you're ready for surgery, we make a small incision. We trace the wire, and then we...
It has to be uncomfortable.
It is. And sometimes patients are waiting in pre-op for like an hour to 2-3 hours and told not to move that much.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. So we don't have that anymore. So what happens is, a couple days or a couple weeks before surgery, they actually place another clip right next to that previous titanium clip. It's the size of a rice grain. It's an electromagnetic little clip. I will say in the area, we have the most advanced one. So when you come to surgery, you're not waiting in pre-op. You're not getting your wire placed. You can move around. We take you to surgery, and I have a special probe that will take me right to that. And the reason why it's more very advanced, our technology, it's 3D.
Now, you've been using this, or the hospital's been using this since June, right?
Yes.
Now, this device that you use, is a handheld device? Is it like a wand? Or how do you, like a metal detector? How are you finding this?
It is like a special wand. So when any surgeon operates, they usually have this little wand. It has different cautery features or cutting features. A tiny little special probe is just stuck to it. So it's like a magic wand.
Now, I'm confused as to how these clips, you call them clips, are placed and how far into the breast are they placed.
So when you get a you know how you get a shot, tiny little needle goes in?
Yeah.
So usually it's a bigger needle, a bigger circumference. So the woman there, you know how you get Novocaine in your mouth?
Sure.
So it's something like, you'll feel like a bee sting on your breast, numb the area, then a little bit bigger shot needle has the little clip that's deployed.
Amazing.
And it's done under imaging, obviously.
This is, technology is incredible. I can't believe that in the old days, prior to June, you put a wire in the breast, and you had to do it that day.
Yes.
But these seeds can go in days before,
right? Correct. Weeks before.
That's incredible.
It's great.
And has it improved the accuracy of what you're looking for?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Definitely. I'm not going back to wires.
We're joined today by Dr. Lynn Choi. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. DJ in the Hudson Valley wrote in an hour or two ago, I would appreciate it if Dr. Choi could mention that there are many different types of breast cancer and not all present as a palpable lump. My LCIS was detected by chance on a mammogram, followed by ultrasound. I had no lump, no puckering, no skin irregularities. Mammograms and the radiologists who read them are critical to catching breast cancer early. And that's from DJ in the Hudson Valley.
So the important message from this talk, if you want to leave right after, is go get your imaging. Go get clinical breast exams. So the most important thing is to get mammograms, ultrasounds, early detection, excellent survival rate. So that's what DJ is talking about. I will clarify, she mentioned LCIS.
Yeah.
LCIS stands for lobular carcinoma in situ. It is not a cancer. It's a pathology that puts you at high risk for cancer. But a lot of patients come and they're like, oh my gosh, I have cancer. It's lobular carcinoma in situ. It's not a cancer. It puts you at high risk. So then your provider will decide if you need extra imaging.
Now, you see patients who have increased lifetime risk of breast cancer. Is that one of the markers you would say, okay, we need to see you very regularly?
So LCIS is something that's usually seen on imaging and biopsy proven. I will say patients will come without biopsies. They say, my mom had breast cancer at this age. My sister, you have this really strong family history. Then we plug in numbers, and then we get this value. If the value is greater than 20% lifetime risk based on your family history, your breast density, when you had your period, when your last period, how many kids you've had, you get a number, and that number tells you if you're high risk or not.
You know, we've talked about this sort of matrix of numbers, this calculation, this algorithm.
Yes.
Who came up with it, and how do you know it's accurate?
So nothing is 100% accurate. I know there was Olivia Munn is a famous actress.
Yeah.
And she actually went to her gynecologist and she did the risk calculator on her. There's different risk calculators. The one my partner and I and a lot of people use is the Tyrer-Cuzick model. It's T-Y-R-E-R and then Cuzick.
Yeah.
And it plugs in different numbers. And that's actually how they figured out that Olivia Munn has a greater than 20% lifetime risk. Then her gynecologist went on to order an MRI. An MRI is recommended if you're high risk. Not every woman.
Is 20% considered high risk?
Correct.
Okay.
So she ended up getting an MRI, and that's how they found her breast cancer.
This model that you use,
yes,
with your partner, how many others are there?
There's a lot of different ones, but this one I like because it actually puts in family history. It also puts in if anyone in your family got genetic testing. It also puts in your density, which is very important.
And how do you measure density?
So it's actually done by the radiologist, and they decide based on how it looks. So when you get a mammogram, the mammogram is an ideal imaging for older women whose breasts aren't dense. So mammograms are recommended at age 40. It's not recommended younger. The younger you are, you tend to have very dense breasts. As you get older, that density gets replaced by fat. So if you look at imaging, you can see right through better if you have fatty breast tissue.
Yeah.
And so the radiologist decides by looking at it if it's really, there's four categories: extremely dense, a little less dense, not really dense, and not dense at all, four levels. And that's how radiologists determine how dense you are.
What's the higher risk? More dense?
More dense, because the mammogram can't see right through.
Ah, understood. Let's take a break here, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number. Dr. Lynn Choi is our guest from Albany Med. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We'll be back with your calls in a moment. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is our number. Medical Monday with Dr. Lynn Choi. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Before we hit the phones, do patients, primarily women, do they ask for this risk assessment more than they need?
I think more people could ask, absolutely. I think asking any question to a doctor, hey, Dr. Choi, am I high risk? Can you calculate for me? That's an absolutely appropriate question because I'll either say yes or no.
Right. But, you know, as a people, as Americans, are we too stressed out about things we cannot control?
Absolutely.
Do you want to expound?
So I love all my patients. I think they should ask as many questions as you need. The less questions you ask, the less you will know. I do have a lot of women saying, can I get an MRI? I need an MRI.
Interesting. Why?
Because their friend's best friend or their sister's mother had breast cancer and they had an MRI. So I support extra imaging if it's necessary. Every breast cancer patient that walks into my office is not getting an MRI. There's a criteria. We follow the American Society of Breast Surgeon guidelines. There's actually a strong push. I would say the treatment for breast pathology is less is more in certain situations.
Interesting.
Absolutely, there will be certain patients who are diagnosed with breast cancer. You have extremely dense breasts. I'm going to say, hey, you need an MRI. But I don't offer that to everyone. MRIs can lead to up to 20% false positive risk. So here I am. This woman wants an MRI. Let's say she gets the MRI. And then you get the results. Oh, we see something. You end up with a biopsy. You're ruined for the couple weeks leading up to it. And then it ends up being benign. I don't want to do undue harm to people who don't need things. And I think that's something in general with medicine.
In this country or everywhere?
Well, healthcare is different in other countries. Healthcare in America is different than healthcare in Europe and Asia. Oh, that's a different topic.
I would love to get you on that topic. All right, let's go to the phones and we'll leave it alone. Dr. Lynn Choi is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll begin in Woodstock. Paula, you're on.
Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I wanted to see what you would recommend for imaging. It ties right into what you were just talking about. I am almost 79, and my mother and my older sister both had lumpectomies at age 79. My younger sister had a double mastectomy at 52. And I want to know what you might recommend in terms of whether I had one MRI about 3 years ago. But I'm wondering what you would recommend about whether I should have bilateral ultrasounds, mammograms, et cetera. What is your recommendation?
So I would absolutely recommend annual imaging in the form of a mammogram, plus or minus an ultrasound. That depends on how dense your breast tissue is. Every woman gets a letter in the mail. Oh, your imaging is clear. You have dense breast tissue, but it won't tell you what level of density. So that's a conversation you have between your provider. Usually, I will say, the risk goes down as you get older.
Yeah.
So, Paula, when you're 40, your risk would be high. If you came to me at 40, I can already tell you would have needed an MRI. Now that you're older and postmenopausal, if I put in the different factors, you actually might not need an MRI. But I would definitely say the annual mammogram plus or minus ultrasound, and I would encourage you to talk to your provider. Hey, can you calculate my risk? The other thing I think that's important in your strong family history is, has anyone had genetic testing?
Yes, both of my sisters have, and they've been negative.
Oh, that's excellent for you.
So does that mean she's in the clear genetically?
I wouldn't say 100%, but I would say probably, yes.
Ah, interesting. Well, that's good news.
Well, the thing that concerns me is because of this family history and my ethnic background, et cetera, I would like to get a mammogram annually, which I've been doing for decades and decades, but I'd like to get a bilateral ultrasound as well. And my doctor seems hesitant to give me a bilateral ultrasound. Do you have any comments on that?
Ask your provider, how dense are my breasts? Okay, there's four.
They're dense.
They're dense.
Oh, okay. Then you should say, hey, can you, I think I should get an ultrasound. I listened to Dr. Choi on Medical Monday, and she recommends an ultrasound because my breasts are dense. But of course, clarify that, because the letter that you get will say you're dense. There's four levels of density. Extremely dense,
right.
Then a little less dense is heterogeneous, then scattered and fatty. If you're scattered, which I don't consider dense, it will say on your letter that you're dense. But you wouldn't need an ultrasound if you came to see me.
Okay. I appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Paula, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. I have to just jump back to this tack we were on for a moment. You know, you mentioned, okay, my friend's sister's cousin had an MRI and they caught something, and I definitely want it. This is sort of peer pressure. Let me ask you, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
In this internet age,
yes.
In this age where every bit of information is out there, allegedly, and everyone is allegedly an expert, at what point do doctors say, you know what? Yes, okay, this is a two-way street. We work with the patient. But at some point, the doctor has to say, yeah, you know, I'm the expert. Is it getting away from that?
No, it's becoming more like that, honestly.
Doctors are in, no, what I mean is,
are
the patients saying, no, I need to have this?
Yes.
I saw this ad for this medication, and by golly, we're going to use it.
Yes, and you know what? It's okay to go to your doctor and say, this commercial told me I need this medication, and then I will say, actually, here's the literature, and I don't really agree with you. It's good to have a conversation.
It is. So you don't mind that?
No,
it would irritate
I don't.
The daylights out of me.
No, there is this great website. This is separate. Choosing Wisely. It goes over a ton of cancers, and it says what questions you should be asking your doctor. People aren't at. I'll say there's two extremes. There's people who come in thinking they're the doctors and telling me what to do.
Yeah.
And then the other extreme, they don't even ask any questions. So then someone says, hey, you need this and this and this kind of surgery. And they go home and they're like, what's happening? Why do I need, you know?
Oh.
There's two extremes. But it's good to have some discourse. And then if you have a disagreement with what I'm saying, then I'll say, oh, you could get a second opinion.
Okay. So that is ultimately how it plays out. If you're steadfast in what the doctor says,
sure.
The doctor says, yeah, check it with somebody else. All right. Number here is 800-348-2551. It's Dr. Lynn Choi, always one of our favorites here on Medical Monday. Let's go to Troy, and it's Susan. Susan, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Choi. This is one of your fans.
Sure. Don't tell them I paid you to do this.
I didn't. No, you didn't pay me. But when I heard your voice, I said, I have to call in and tell the listeners what you did for me. About 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with a second breast cancer, different breast, different type. And I was told I owed it to myself to go to a teaching hospital. So I live in Troy. I went to Albany Med, had a consultation, and that person called you up, and immediately I got an appointment, which was kind of unusual.
Yeah.
And when I saw you, you said, do you mind if I have my students come in when I'm talking to you? And I said, of course not. I think this is really important, which they did, and even I think during the surgery. So I just wanted to tell potential patients out there, do your research before you take the reference that you might be getting from your PCP as to where to go for breast surgery. And highly recommend Dr. Choi.
Wow.
And she has been following me for the past 5 years. I'm really, really grateful for everything you've done for me.
Susan, you can become my social media's manager.
Now, I just want to make it clear. Reiterate, please, you're not getting paid for that endorsement, right, Susan?
No, not getting paid.
Well,
although I did make a nice gift to Albany Med in her name.
Thank you very much, Susan. Appreciate the call. How about that? Doesn't that make you feel better? You came in here not in a great mood. I don't think you wanted any part of me. And now you're in a good mood.
I love coming here. This is one of the highlights of my October, coming to see you. But I will say my patients just make, I think I have one of the best jobs. And being able to make a difference for patients who are in a beep beep situation,
yeah,
a little less beep,
yeah,
like, means the world to me.
You know, we've talked about this before. Number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get back to all that stuff in a minute. We have talked about this perhaps in the years that you've been on this show. Does it ever bring you down? I mean, sometimes there's bad news. I mean, how do you deal with this?
Ugh, I don't know how I deal with it. And all I think is, I feel so bad, but the patients have it worse.
Yeah.
It's just, there's some times where, actually, I went to this fundraising event and patients and patients' families were, it was a fashion fundraiser. And I went to support one of my patients. Her husband was walking down the aisle, the fashion for her. And then this one patient came down and she took her wig off. And then I lost. I don't cry.
Yeah.
I cried. I didn't even cry when my kids were born. But then when she took her wig off, I had to get up and, you know, it's very emotional because these patients should never have to go through these things.
When you go to medical school, mm-hmm. and oddly enough, I'm a radio guy, so I was never close to anything like that. Do they give you courses in psychology and how to deal with these sort of things?
Not when I went to medical school. No. Now they do.
They do
absolutely.
I think it's important for your well-being.
Absolutely. But you know what? Even though they have courses like that, and it's being more developed, but it's really during your clinical years, your third and fourth year, where you follow doctors and you hear them have difficult discussions, especially as a resident, all the time.
Yeah. You know, I've spent a fair amount of time in hospitals over the last 5 years with relatives who were sick and some didn't make it. And one thing that is amazing, and you must see this, and then we'll get back to the phones, is the unrelenting spirit of people, even when they're facing stuff. I mean, everybody that I saw, even those that didn't make it, were just positive and just strong. And it tells you something about humanity, don't you think?
Yes, there's hope.
There is hope. Let's go to West Hampton, Massachusetts. Matt, you're on.
Hey, I had a question for the doctor on what her take is on thermography for imaging for women.
I don't recommend it.
Why? What is it? What is it?
Go ahead, Matt.
Full spectrum, they call it, or something? Is it called full spectrum thermography, I think? Something.
No? Okay. So, all right. Well, Matt, she doesn't recommend it, but I'm going to question her on it, and thank you for the call. So what's the problem, and what's it supposed to do, and why don't you think it's any good?
It basically images your breast to see if there's different temperatures. It's just not the standard of care.
Can you learn anything from differentiation in temperatures?
I'm going to say no for now.
Interesting. But the jury's out, or are people still studying it, or?
Maybe. You have to get mammograms. Mammograms, they're the gold standard for imaging. The sensitivity is in the high 80s. And then if you're dense, then you add the ultrasounds, it goes up even higher. Mammograms see calcifications, they see distortions, they see masses. And then depending on how dense your breasts are, we might add an ultrasound to that, maybe an MRI as well.
So is I've never heard of thermography before. Presumably you read all the journals and all of your colleagues in breast cancer care. Are there any who say, yeah,
no?
Okay, let's go to the phones again. We'll go to East Greenbush. Laurie, you're on with Dr. Lynn Choi.
Hi, Dr. Choi. I have a question for you. When I was first diagnosed and they were coming with the HER2 status.
Yes.
One of the tests came back a 1+. Then the FISH test came back negative. I was told I was negative at the time. Now I'm told I'm ultra low. What's the difference?
This is actually interesting you bring this up because I was discussing this with a pathologist last week. So just to catch our readers up, if you get diagnosed with a breast cancer, there are three receptors that are tested for every breast cancer. It kind of gives the flavor of the breast cancer, a profile. There's three receptors. There's ER, estrogen receptor, female hormone, PR, progesterone receptor, And the third receptor is HER, not him, but her, and the number 2. So it just gives a profile to kind of help target your sort of medical treatment afterwards. So one of the receptors is HER2. Usually how they test that is IHC, immunohistochemistry. They look at the staining on the microscope and they'll give you a 1+, 2+, or 3+. 1+ is probably your HER2 negative. 2+ is unsure, let's do more staining. And 3+ is, wow, you'll probably be HER2 positive. That's the first line. Then they do second testing, HER2 FISH. It's more sensitive testing to figure out what that receptor is, and that comes back as positive or negative.
Lori.
Yes.
You want to follow up?
I'm just wondering if now being classified as ultra low, if there's anything that should be added.
No.
Medication-wise, besides just the letrozole.
No, I think being plus one or low means you're HER2 negative, so you don't need HER2 targeted therapy. But to come back to what I've said before, if Lori was in my office, Lori should be saying, do I need any more treatment? What about this HER2 receptor? So it's more of a discussion you have.
When Lori said plus one, what does that mean?
Low.
Low, okay. Lori, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Dr. Lynn Choi joins us, and let's go to Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on.
What is the success rate for cure after redevelopment of cancer years later?
So if you come to me, it's 110%. Hey, I'm just kidding. that's a very... general question, so that all depends on what's the profile of the second tumor? What kind of surgery do you need? Do you need other treatment afterwards?
All right. Jim, thanks a lot. What's the percentage of breast cancer patients who don't have mastectomies but have lumpectomies?
Actually, so we are NAPBC accredited. That's by the American College of Surgeons. There's all these stringent guidelines that we follow, and we've always gotten the check mark. We got accreditation in 2021, and then we got accreditation in reaccreditation in 2024. And one of the standards is really to push breast-conserving surgery, like to go away from the mastectomies. And the push really is to have mastectomy rate of less than 30% or less. So they're really pushing that. So when a woman comes to me with a small tumor that where surgery is recommended up front, and the woman comes to me and says, I just want a mastectomy. Actually, I want a bilateral mastectomy. So I tell them the difference in survival rate doing a lumpectomy and radiation versus a mastectomy and no radiation, there's really no difference.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes.
That really is amazing.
Correct.
And so when patients have lumpectomies, and I've heard that those who have mastectomies, they can still get breast cancer again, even though the breasts aren't there. What's the incident of recurrence of cancer if you just do lumpectomies?
It should be comparable to a mastectomy.
Amazing.
In the single-digit percentages.
Incredible. Dr. Lynn Choi is our guest. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll go back to the phones. Email is also voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Kristen McBride with a tremendous version of Steely Dan's Asia there on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. What's in the book there, Doc? What you doing?
I have up-to-date statistics because someone has a question about breast cancer in men.
Oh, okay. Shall we go to that one then? We'll go to that one first. He's a little out of order, but we'll go to Adam in Del Mar. Adam, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I wanted to know. I know they say that breast cancer in men is very rare, but I wanted to know, men who have gynecomastia, are they at higher risk of developing breast cancer?
Not directly, I will say, so gynecomastia, what Adam is talking about, is actually the number one cause of male patients coming to see me. They talk about a lump in their breast, and it does feel like a lump behind their nipple, and that is not cancer. There's no direct correlation with gynecomastia and breast cancer. I will say that as a male, if you feel a lump or have any symptoms, you should absolutely ask to see a breast surgeon.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. What's gynecomastia?
It's basically a larger breast seen in men.
Okay.
And can be seen in boys at puberty age as well.
Interesting. And what brings it on?
Either new medication or hormonal changes. That's why the bimodal rates are usually teenagers, young boys, or older men where the estrogen level can...
Huh. Number here is 800-348-2551. It's Dr. Lynn Choi. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we always bring Dr. Choi back right around this time every year. Let's go to Ann in Clinton. Ann, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Hi, Ray. Hi, Dr. Choi.
Hi.
My question is about side effects. I was recently diagnosed with breast cancer, and I've had 5 chemo treatments. I have 18 in total to get through. My question is about the side effects. I'm starting to feel some of them, lost a lot of hair, but should we expect the side effects to increase in intensity or decrease or stay the same? Or can you tell me about long-term side effects and what to expect? I haven't had very many so far, but I'm a little nervous about what's
sure.
to come.
Sure. First of all, I'm really sorry that you have to deal with this. I am not an oncologist, but I can tell you that this would be a great question for your oncologist. There are a lot of side effects with chemotherapy. Some women do well. Some of my patients, the side effects gets worse as you continue with your rounds. Some of the long-term side effects I've seen with some of my patients are like neuropathy, nerve issues, but everyone's different. Mm. Yeah, I'm really sorry. I would ask your oncologist. Also, it also depends what chemo regimen you're getting as well.
Well, I'm on triple therapy. I'm HER2 positive, triple positive.
Oh, okay.
So I'm getting immunotherapy and chemo. It's okay.
We're going to hope for the best for you, because with HER2 positive, which we talked about before,
yeah.
You can get up to a 60% of a complete response, meaning that when you get imaged before you see your breast surgeon to have surgical planning, 60% of women with HER2 positive disease, you might not even see it. The tumor might be completely melted away by your chemotherapy.
All right, Ann, thanks a lot and good luck. 800-348-2551. Now, you're a surgeon, not an oncologist. But to your knowledge, has the chemo, have they focused it and made it so that there are less side effects than, say, 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, yes, absolutely. With chemotherapy, with surgery, with radiation, everything is being more targeted. People are doing so much better. Back in the day, you came for bilateral mastectomies. You'd absolutely stay overnight. They're going home.
Amazing. I mean, your techniques, are you using lasers or are you just robotics or anything that's new? Or is it the same surgery that has been done for
many years?
Same
surgery, but less. There are some people in the country, a very small minority, who are discussing robotic mastectomy, but that's not standard of care. I will say, again, less is more. So there were 2 pivotal trials that came out within the last 5 years. They're, if you want to look this up, the Insema trial and the Sound trial. So if a woman came to me 5 years ago with an invasive cancer, we would talk about either a lumpectomy or a mastectomy and checking a couple lymph nodes.
Yeah.
Now, these 2 trials have shown that in a lot of women, you could actually avoid removing lymph nodes, which is huge. Absolutely.
The number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Dr. Lynn Choi from Albany Med, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Tess in Williamstown writes, I'm 36. I have extremely dense breast tissue, a father with breast cancer, but he had genetic testing that was negative for all markers, and my tyrosine percentage has ranged between 23 and 42% over 4 years. I've been advised to have alternating breast MRIs and mammograms, which I've now done since 2021. Can you talk about ultrasound versus breast MRI as the additional imaging for dense breast tissue? Breast MRIs are extremely uncomfortable, so I'm curious if there is a more comfortable option, and that's from Tess in Williamstown.
That's an excellent question. So if your risk is going to come up greater than 20%, you are going to be recommended an annual mammogram, and I am going to recommend an annual MRI. Based on the American Society of Breast Surgeon guidelines, if there's any website that any of my patients look at, I tell them look at none of them except breast360.org. It's a website for patients supported by our society. And they recommend that if a woman is recommended an MRI, that's actually the best imaging for extremely dense breast tissue. I typically drop the ultrasound, so you're getting a mammo. They're best for calcifications. That's done once a year. Then MRIs are done once a year, and they're staggered, so you're getting some sort of imaging every 6 months. I do have patients who say, I cannot get an MRI. It's too much. MRIs are really uncomfortable. The best MRIs are through closed MRIs for breasts. You get thinner slices. You're on your belly. You're going through a tube. It sounds like a laundry machine. In it for 20 to 30 minutes. If you're claustrophobic, you're not going to get
through. Is that why they're uncomfortable? I mean,
yes.
Is that, but it's just psychological. It's not physical uncomfortable.
So some of my patients with back pain being
on the belly.
You know, it's just, there's a lot of factors where it's uncomfortable. And don't forget, you're getting gadolinium contrast.
And does that have, do you feel that?
I've never had an
MRI.
I mean,
God.
You just have to get an IV. So
right.
Not just an IV. For some people, that's a big deal.
I know somebody who had an MRI for gallbladder not too long ago, and she said it was so noisy and
yes.
So almost terrifying.
Laundry
how
machine.
Much? Yeah, crazy. Number here is 800-348-2551, but yet you learn more with them than you do with ultrasound, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's go back to our phones here, and the number is 800-348-2551. Tell you what there, Bob Rathbun, we're going to go over to Susan in West Stockbridge right now, so release her. Susan, you're on. Hello?
I'm here.
Go ahead. You're on.
I'm on?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, that was fast.
Yep.
Okay, hi. I'm 82 years old, and I've been getting mammograms for, I don't know, many, many, many years, since maybe I'm 40. And I'm on a very low dose estrogen patch and a little vaginal estriol. I'm due for a mammogram, which I will get in November. Can I go every 2 years from now on?
That's actually a great question, because the other question is, when can I stop my mammograms? So if you follow our society guidelines, they say that you can stop your imaging if you don't have 10 more years left in life. Not that I'm a good predictor of when you're gonna
right.
So but that's a discussion between you and your provider. I have that discussion with patients, because I have patients who are 85 and they can barely get on the patient table. For those patients, I say, you know what, we're not gonna do any more imaging, but you should see a provider on a yearly basis to get a good breast exam at least. So
right.
And then you talked about hormone replacement therapy that you're getting. This is an excellent question, because there was a huge study many decades ago, and it scared women into taking hormone replacement therapy. As a breast surgeon, the people, I do not recommend hormone replacement therapy. These are women who go through menopausal symptoms. If you've had a breast cancer that's hormone positive, you absolutely, I wouldn't recommend that. However,
right.
You can use your vaginal cream. There's minimal absorption. That's if you're having dryness. That's completely fine to use anyone. So very excellent question, Susan.
Well, I have very severe osteoporosis, and
yes.
I was not going to go on any of the bisphosphonates, et cetera.
Yep.
And so I do strontium, and what I agreed to was the estrogen, and my doctors get hysterical and they want me off it and they lowered it. I'm not afraid of it for some reason. I've been on estrogen. Now I'm on a patch since 93, and I'm not afraid. And
is that recommended,
I don't know.
Doc, to go on a patch for that long?
So there's a slight association with the longer you're on it. Being on it for over 20 years, that's a discussion that you should have, like, should I wean off of it? Patients on it for that long of a time, I do say maybe we should consider trying to wean off of it. but excellent question to bring up.
Thanks, Susan. Appreciate the call. It's 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's talk about the future, Dr. Lin Choi. What is on the horizon? What is the next generation for treatment and prevention?
So there's this excellent trial going on, spearheaded in Duke, called the Comet Trial.
Comet?
Comet Trial, just like Halley's Comet. There's an early breast cancer called ductal carcinoma in situ. That's DCIS. It's actually a stage zero. Some people would say that they're trying to get the name of cancer away from this and say it's a high-risk lesion. That's caught on mammogram. It's usually in the form of calcifications. And the standard of care now is to surgically remove that. This big trial is going on to maybe treat this medically, to not do surgery.
How would you treat it medically?
So if you have, there's different grades of DCIS. We're talking about the lower grades of DCIS that are hormone positive, to just take a hormone blocking pill.
Oh, interesting.
It's very interesting.
So this is at Duke?
With multiple centers.
And when a study like this is done, and there are studies done, a lot of studies all over the country and all over the world, how long does it take for that information, that data, to be vetted and tabulated and then put out to the medical community?
Once the results are out, I think they're trying to do 5 to 10 year follow-up studies for this trial. Once the results are out, people really try to adopt it. For us, when the InSema and Sound trial came up to say, hey, let's avoid doing a sentinel lymph node biopsy, meaning take a couple lymph nodes for every invasive cancer, our practice was pretty good to start discussing it, and we adopt it regularly now within the first 1 to 2 years.
So this is interesting. If there's not a new medication involved, but it's a procedural thing, then the medical community makes that decision without the government saying you have to do it this way?
Yeah, it's based on your guideline societies.
That's amazing.
Yes.
All right, Dr. Lin Choi, we got a couple of minutes left here. What do people need to know that you and I didn't discuss about breast cancer and Breast Cancer Awareness Month?
I will say that the rates of breast cancer in younger women are slowly trending higher than women getting it older. And I don't think this is something seen in just breast cancer. It's seen in other cancers, such as colorectal. So this is kind of a difficult thing to talk about to patients, because the guideline is to get imaging at age 40.
Right.
But I'm seeing patients in their 20s getting breast cancer. So I
But if there's no screening, how do you figure it out?
Every woman should get a clinical exam when they're young, annually, either by your primary care or your gynecologist. If you're not getting an exam, since everyone's so specialized, ask them. Say, I'm not getting an annual breast exam. Can you do this? A lot of the cancers picked up in younger women, either the woman is aware of it, so I do actually recommend self-exams, or their gynecologist or primary care finds it.
And if you have an exam early, that sets a baseline then?
Yes.
Interesting. And you're still okay with 40 for mammograms? I mean, this has been something we've talked about up and down and changing the years.
40 is standard for normal risk patients. If you're high risk, you're going to start getting imaging sooner. Can I just say one thing?
Yeah,
that everyone...
we still have a couple of minutes. Go ahead.
So patients always come to me and say, what can I do? And there's three things that you can do. One is really working on your diet, plant-forward diet, 80% plants, fruits, vegetables, 20% meats. If you want meat, lean meats, white meats. That's one. Number two is really decreasing or eliminating your alcohol intake. And the third is exercise, 150 minutes of moderate exercise a week, or 75 minutes of vigorous exercise a week. These are three things that everyone can work on to decrease the risk for multiple cancers.
Now, what if somebody is 60, 65, and they've led perhaps not that pristine a lifestyle? At what point does it matter? If they stop, okay, I've laid off the booze, I'm not eating meat, I'm plant forward, as you say.
Yeah.
At some point, it's not going to matter, right? When you're 70.
It absolutely matters.
Really?
Yes. It's just lifestyle habits. It's also like being a nice person. You can always be nice.
Ah, well, speak for yourself. All right. Well, listen, Dr. Lin Choi, we're almost done here, but it's always great having you here. And we have a link to Albany Med right on our page today.
Excellent.
You know, any closing thoughts? 30 seconds.
Ray, it's been a pleasure.
That's all you got. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? Good luck, and thank you very much. Support comes from Stinging Nettle Botanics, Main Street, Catskill, New York, offering handcrafted organic herb-based products incorporating natural herbal remedies into daily life. StingingNettleNY.com. Once again, I want to thank Dr. Lin Choi for being here today. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, how much fun can it be talking about breast cancer? It's always good having her on the show. Thanks to Zach Malloy, the returning engineer. Zach, beautiful job. Phones were screened today by Bob Rathbun. And coming up on the program tomorrow, we will talk real estate. We haven't done this in a while. The real estate market has been up and down and up and down because of the interest rates and whatnot. We'll talk with Alexander Monticello and Renata Lewis. So if you're thinking of buying or selling, you know, you call us at 2 p.m. Stand by now for something wonderful.